It's par three day in Augusta, meaning opening round is right around the corner. We'll go live to Augusta National. We'll also talk with a multiple winner on the PGA Tour and get his thoughts and recollections on his first trip to the famed golf course in Georgia. Mike Dettillier joins us on the NFL Draft. Michael Hugenin on spring football in the SEC. And bombshells in the NBA all coming your way today, Wednesday, April 10th, 2019.
Across the timeline, jump pass now is back to Westbrook. Left corner, George up with a three that's on line. Cha-ching, Thunder money ball. 1.8 seconds up. Thunder 112. The Rockets 111. Oh, baby. What a shot.
And Springer lines it down the left field line. A fair ball headed for the corner. Gurriel scores. Chirinos around third. He will score. Kip flying around third. He's coming home. Kip stumbles between third and home. And now he races back to third and will get back in safely. It's a two-run double for George Springer and a 5-3 Astros lead.
Wait for three. Got another one off the glass. Oh, my. I'll tell you, that's the secret. Use the window. Dwayne Wade, four trays.
Oh, good afternoon. Good afternoon. The end of an era in Miami. Dwayne Wade scores 30, much of it kind of with that Matador defense by the Philadelphia 76ers. To let him get his, a night of joy and sadness in Dallas as Dirk Nowitzki's career, his last home game as a Dallas Maverick. And thankfully, the Pelicans season has come to a close. 33 up and 49 down, 13th place in the 15-teamed Western Conference of the NBA. And with that, we say, good afternoon. How are you? What a beautiful, oh my gosh, drop-dead gorgeous day it is. Hope you're out there enjoying it. Thanks so much for dialing us up. My main man, CD, in the master control suite of the 237 Roof Studios on the campus of Delta Media. 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com. A bombshell of an announcement last night is Magic Johnson stepping down as the president of basketball operations for the Los Angeles Lakers. He never told his boss. He said he didn't want her to convince him to come back. He just wanted to get on with his life and have some fun. Really? Really? Here's Magic Johnson on the reason why he's stepping down.
I had more fun on the other side than on this side, because now tomorrow I would have to affect somebody's livelihood and their life. And I thought about that. I said, that's not fun for me. That's not who I am. And then I don't want to put her in the middle of us, you know, even though she said, hey, you do what you want to do. I want to go back being who I was before taking on this job.
I really believe he saw the handwriting on the wall. And he said, man, this is going to be a consummate failure. I don't know. Nobody wants to come play with my man LeBron. And I got to get out of here before it gets even worse. That's what I believe. I really, truly believe. Anyway, the misery of the Pelicans, Alvin Gentry, what did you tell the team after the last loss in the last game of this season?
I told him right afterwards, we're going to be good next year and we're going to make the damn playoffs. I said that and I mean that. I believe that.
Wow, Alvin, very good. Elfrid Payton, the UL Raging Cajun star, he's searching for some kind of direction.
Some of these questions answered?
I mean, obviously, there's a little curiosity to see some kind of direction, but, I mean, I can't let myself worry about that. I can't do anything to change any of that, so be wasting my time.
Very well said. It's not my job. My job is to run the team, be in the point guard. You guys make the decisions, I'll show up, and I'll go play. Meanwhile, Augusta National, always the talk of Tiger Woods. Nobody moves the needle more. CBS is hoping and praying he's in contention on Sunday. For Tiger Woods, Augusta is a special place.
This event is so different. It's pure golf. You know, it's just player and caddy out there playing. We're prepping together, and there's no other distractions inside the ropes here. It's just us playing, and you see some of the greatest golf you've ever seen here.
No cell phones allowed, and we'll see how Tiger Woods does. Can he get another one under his belt and add to his Grand Slam total? That's what everybody, I think the betting public, I think the majority of the public would love to see nothing more than that. And I know the PGA would love nothing more than Tiger really being back and winning a major. Standing in his way, trying to go for the career Grand Slam yet again, is one Rory McIlroy.
I'm in a good place with it. You know, I'm dearly love to win this tournament one day. If it doesn't happen this week, that's totally fine. I'll come back next year and I'll have another crack at it. But I'm happy with where everything is, body, mind, game.
Rory McIlroy. Meanwhile, the elder statesman on the tour, Phil Mickelson, he's 48. He's won already, not playing great right now, but can he conjure up the magic that brought him ultimate success a couple of times at Augusta?
It's fun for me to play with these young guys and to see their game develop. It's actually fun stories. It's a little weird, but it's pretty cool too, and I enjoy that. There's a lot of good young players that I have a lot of respect for that were barely born, or if not, weren't born when I started playing the tour.
The elder statesman, Phil Mickelson. And one name you don't hear much about, but it seems like he's always there. He had some opportunities to win in prior years, but a couple of ill-advised shots. But don't ever count Jordan Spieth out.
Well, it's my favorite tournament in the whole world. I've said that in here quite a few times. It has been since it was kind of a big reason why I fell in love with the game of golf when I was playing a bunch of sports. And one of the reasons being I was just not that very good at the other sports. But I also took a love for this game because of this tournament.
And we'll see what all happens. It all unfolds starting tomorrow. There was a tweet out that said, hold that Tiger, and that means you know Coach O got himself another commitment. And this time, an already talented 2020 recruiting class added another high-profile name today, Texas four-star defensive back Lorando Johnson announced his commitment to the Tigers via Twitter. He is a number 150 player in the country, the number 11 cornerback, according to 247 Sports composite rankings. He joins five-star California cornerback Elias Ricks as the two defensive backs in this class, following a 2019 class loaded at defensive back. He had offers from, now this is Johnson now, this is what I value. Who else wanted you? That'll tell me a lot. Well, he had offers from Alabama, Auburn, Ole Miss, Ohio State, and Michigan. That's all I need to hear. Now, honor your commitment, and Lorando Johnson, if you get Johnson and Ricks, there's two shutdown cover corners from day one. How about that? All right. Coming up, after this first timeout of the day, the greatest golfer in LSU history, a PGA Tour winner 18 times, David Toms joins us next to share his thoughts and his experiences at Augusta National. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com, brought to you by Hooters. Hey, college basketball may be over, but the NBA playoffs are getting ready to start. The NHL playoffs are starting, and we've got the Masters. What a great place to watch it all under one roof. Hooters. Hooters just makes you happy. We'll be right back.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
And we welcome you back. With the Masters getting underway on Thursday, I thought no better person to talk to about experiencing Augusta National than our next guest. 25 years he was a member of the PGA Tour, where he won 13 events, including the 2001 PGA Championship. He was in the top 10 of the official world golf rankings for 175 weeks from 2001 to 2006, ranked as high as fifth in 2002 and 2003. The greatest golfer LSU has ever known, David Toms, kind enough to join us. David, I greatly appreciate the time. How are you, sir?
I'm good, Jordy. I'm anxious to watch the Masters this week. There's so many guys that I think I have a chance to win, and should be exciting. I'll probably be glued to the television, laying on the couch all weekend long. So
I'm with you.
Pretty excited about it.
I'm with you. Your best result at the Masters was in 1998. You tied for sixth. Take me back to that first time you made that ride up to that between the tree laden road, and you went to the club. What was that experience like? Take me back to the first time.
Actually, the first time that I ever got to play Augusta was probably a month before the tournament there in 98. Went with my father and one of the guys at Club Car, who was a member, Dr. John Reynolds. And we went and played and had a great time and couldn't wait to get back, you know, a month or so later to play the event. And it was just kind of an average week the way I played until the back nine on Sunday. I shot 29 in 98 and made a run at the leaderboard and had to go sit. You know, when I finished, I went and sat in one of the cabins there with one of the members to wait until somebody finished ahead of me, and because they want to kind of know where you are, you know, if you have a chance to win or whatever. And so it was a great experience. And then obviously I looked forward to going back every year. I got to play there multiple times, and you know, when you stop being eligible to play there, you really miss that week for sure. It was pretty special.
It is special. It's kind of like it's the only tour event that's on the same piece of property every year. Tell me what made it special for you. What is it about the place?
Well, I think first of all, the history of all the players that have, you know, played there and played that golf tournament on that golf course in that city, you know, for so long, and people that were obviously generations ahead of me in golf and professional golf, and just that, you know, knowing that you walk the same grounds as all those greats in the game and you know, tried to make those putts from certain areas, and, you know, watching Jack Nicklaus make that putt on 17. I was in college. I think we were over at Buddy Alexander's house, our coach at the time, watching.
There you go.
In what, 86. And so, I mean, just little things like that. And then, you know, watching my kids grow up there, we rented the same house every year from the Hogan family. It's kind of interesting. Their last name was Hogan.
Interesting.
And, and I was like, it seemed like about every 3 or 4 years they had done some renovations. I'm like, in my mind, I'd paid for their renovations over the years. And so just fun, you know, playing baseball in the front yard with my son and just having pictures and videos, you know, just,
that's,
you know,
awesome.
Watching both kids kind of be able to go there. And a lot of family and friends along the way. I remember Kyle Williams coming over to the house one time to get tickets for the weekend from me to go watch. And just a lot of, you know, neat memories, really, of all the people and friends of mine that have been able to go see me play there. And, you know, a lot of Tiger fans always in the crowd, you know, yelling,
sure,
"Go Tigers" all the time. And just,
that's awesome.
You know, those memories that are good. You know, certainly I've missed my share of cuts there and had my share of good tournaments, a little bit of everything over the years. And just a place, like you said, the cool thing about it is going to play a major championship at the same venue every single year. It just doesn't happen. It really doesn't happen in any
anywhere
sport, because you think about it, you know, the playoffs, you know, depending on who's playing well, you know, bowl games.
Well,
all
the only around, the only you know, just, the only sport, David, is tennis. That's the only one.
That's right. That's true.
That's it.
And it's an individual sport too, so it
right.
makes sense. But
yeah.
you know, for golf, it makes it really special.
And I guess you get to know some of the patrons and some of the you know the locker room guys, the clubhouse guys, and they're there every year too.
Oh yeah, I mean the same, seeing the same friendly faces, and I remember my grandfather when he was alive watching me play there. You know, he'd go put his chair out like everybody else does, and it's kind of funny because
wow.
he'd write his name on the back of it. I was good, so he, everybody
proud.
Knew who he was watching. It was kind of
yeah.
funny. So, but
That's
yeah,
awesome.
Just great, great memories of the place for sure.
What is it that makes it, because it is, it's kind of unique, as you said, it's the same course year in, year out, and you yourself said, sometimes I had some really good times out there, and sometimes I didn't play very well, but it's the same course, but it's a different challenge each and every year, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, it always depends on the weather, if it's firm or fast, if it's soft, you know, is it breezy, mm-hmm. because when it gets breezy, the wind is all over the place because of the trees, number one, but the elevation change, and they tweak the golf course a little bit every year, and it's always interesting to go back and try to figure out exactly what they did, because everything looks like it's been there forever, even when they change something. And you know, it's great, and the cool part about it is just seeing, you know, the spectators that are there, you know, maybe for the first time, and they see the place and they're just so excited to be there and be a part of the event. And, you know, it's that one tournament every year where as a player you felt like you were in a fishbowl or an aquarium,
I
and
bet.
Everybody's kind of looking at you, you know, and it was always neat, you know. And, you know, I think it's, you know, an event that the players really love, and certainly one of those events that everybody wants to win.
David Toms, kind enough to join us. It's great for television, but television, I guess, does not do it justice. You mentioned the change in elevation. Just how tough of a walk is it on that course?
Well, it is a tough walk, and I think that, you know, maybe not enough is written and said about that as far as, you know, stamina with players late in the day and, you know, all that pressure and everything else and uneven lies. I mean, you know, it's so different than any other event. And you feel like you're never on a flat piece of ground, even when you get
yeah.
to the putting green. You never, I mean, you're just always having to pay attention to what you're doing. And but you look forward to it. I think it's one of those kind of golf courses where you're, you know, it's very important to be there on every shot, and so I think that mm-hmm. brings out the best in a lot of the players, and you see the same guys tend to play well there all the time because they're able to deal with all those things, and the whole city is behind it. You know, it's like the event for that
yes.
region and that part of the Georgia every year, and certainly, you know, it's such a big deal for the city of Augusta, and you know, everybody's there for the Masters, and,
yeah.
You know, everyone's on the same page, and everybody understands the importance of it. As a player, you feel that.
What would a Tiger Woods win at Augusta do for the PGA Tour and the game of golf?
Well, I mean, I think it would be huge. I mean, certainly, you know, I mean, like he said the other day, he said, you know, I don't have to win tournaments or I don't have to win the Masters, but I certainly want to. And I think that, mm-hmm. you know, I think a lot of people that are there playing as a competitor, I mean, if you can't win, you know, who better to win the event than Tiger Woods, and what the exposure that gets for the sport of golf, it carries over to even the old guys playing the Champions Tour like me, and the young guys playing the web.com, and the kids playing in Latin America and Canada.
Yeah. Yeah.
China and all over the world. I mean, it's just a big deal. I mean, he kind of, you know, he brings a completely different element to the game, and media focus and fan focus, and people that might not care much about golf, if Tiger has a chance, they'll be watching. And certainly it's great for all of us in the game.
I really want to compliment you. You've taken the game of golf and you've made a great, great, great living off of it, but you are David Toms Foundation, helping underprivileged, abused, and abandoned children. I just really tip my cap off to you for the way you have given back to help others that are so far less privileged than you are. So thank you for doing that.
Well, thanks, Jordy. And I mean, I think as you know, anybody that has celebrity or a voice or influence, I think we're called to do those types of things, and I think it's the right thing to do. I think certainly giving back to people that aren't as fortunate as I've been in my life and playing a sport, being able to have the support of people in Louisiana and anyone associated with LSU, anyone from our mm-hmm. part of the world that has followed me and supported me, I think it's just, you know, a way to give back to them and say thank you. And, you know, I've been certainly blessed and be able to, you know, play this game for a long time and somewhat healthy. And I tell people all the time, you know, ask me what the Champions Tour is like. I said, it doesn't matter what it's like. I mean, I get to play golf for a living.
Yes.
Age 52. I mean, yes. Most other sports, I mean, you played sports. You know what it's like. Everybody's yeah. done at 35 years old. And just to be, you know, I mean, just to be a part of it and be yes. able to compete is, it keeps you young. It keeps you working toward a goal. And, you know, like I said, I've been very fortunate.
I tried to get you on after you went on the Champions Tour. You said, I'd love to, but I got the family. We're going to Tahoe. I said, man, that's a tough life. That's a tough life.
Well, you know,
but you've earned it.
You got to get away. I mean,
you've earned it.
You know, I mean, well, thank you. And, you know, it's a pressure cooker a lot of times. When you're inside the ropes and you had a chance to win at any level, it takes a lot out of you. And you certainly need to relax and come back down to earth. And any time that you're with family on vacation, it can certainly bring you back down to reality for sure.
Yes, it does.
So,
yeah. You're not the PGA Tour winner.
That's the reality. That's right. Yes. You're just dad yes. again. So it's good.
All right, real quick, in about 20 seconds, give me a name to look yep. forward to on this Masters week.
Man, I like this guy, Xander Schauffele. I've never played golf with him, but he's very cool under pressure, and I'm sure he's okay. excited to be playing the Masters. He seems like he drives it well. And you know, the golf course is now, you certainly have to be a ball striker. You just can't be a guy that has short game to win at the Masters now with the more difficult tee to green. So, I mean, I'm hoping all he right. plays well. I mean, certainly hope he plays well because I said he's going to. So
that's right. That's right.
We'll see. Yeah.
Well, thanks
yeah.
for the tip. Let me give you one tip. LSU all football right. is going to be really, really good in 2019. How about that?
No, I went to the spring game. I enjoyed it. I was on the
They're going to be good, DT.
It's going to be good. I certainly hope so. I'll be pulling hard. So
you got it, brother. Enjoy the weekend, man, and thanks for the time. Yeah. Always a privilege.
All right, Jordan. Yeah, thank you.
All right,
you.
Take care. Bye-bye. David Toms on Augusta National. How about that? All right, timeout. Mike Dettillier, NFL Draft, next. We're loaded today.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Holtberg Show on 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the app.
All right, here we go. Welcome back. He's the best in the business. If you don't have his M&D draft report, then you're missing out on everything you need to know about the upcoming NFL draft. My good friend, the best in the business, Mike Dettillier, kind enough to join us. Michael, Hayes in the barn, buddy. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Thank you, Jordy.
before we get to the draft, your thoughts on LSU and spring football? I know there's not a lot to – it's all vanilla, but you have a discerning eye when it comes to talent, so you're watching players do their thing. What impressed you the most from what you saw last Saturday?
Well, also, too, I've been to a couple of practices. So I think you have seen a difference offensively in that this is going to be a short, quick passing game, very similar to what you see, you know, around college football today uh-huh. and in the pros. And getting the ball more out to the to the backs coming out the backfield. I think that was something Joe Brady has brought in to the scheme, so to speak, and Coach O likes that part of it. This will still be a run-oriented team that, you know, they like the power part of the game. That's how O has always been. But I think the feature of the short, quick passing game and letting that wide out sort of one-on-one things downfield and like an extended handoff, is new to LSU. We haven't seen much of that. And so I like that part of it. I thought certainly the big difference is you got Joe Burrow out there playing as quarterback. That
helps.
A major difference than what we've seen in the past. And, you know, Joe's got control of this team. I think Miles is the talent, the arm talent. And he's gotten better. He has some erratic moments with him, but he's really talented as a passer. Man, he can spin it. And you got those receivers. Really, you got a real talented group there. The negative is the tackle positions, and not only just one, but both right and left. You were getting lot of pressure, and that to me is a concern today, and was a concern before, and a concern after. Defensively, you sort of dominated things up front. And certainly the two freshmen with Stingley and I could sort of show, you know, those guys can play. And you've got a big defensive lineman that can step in and do that quickly. That's impressive. That doesn't happen every day. And think about this scrimmage you played and you didn't have Caleb on Chase on. You didn't have Christian Fulton. You didn't have Rashard Lawrence. You didn't have Jacob Phillips. LSU's defense is really talented. That's not a concern for me unless you get a rash of injuries along the defensive line. The big question mark to me is certainly at the tackle position and who's going to be your place kicker. Cole Tracy's going to be difficult to replace.
Yes.
I mean, he was really good.
Yes.
And he's going to end up, Jordy, being the first kicker off the board.
Is it? Okay.
As a draft choice. I mean, you know, from inside 50 yards, he's been really accurate. He didn't do the kicking, so to speak. He did it at Assumption on kickoffs, but he hadn't done it here at LSU. And he's worked with Martin Anderson on that. In fact, a year ago, Martin came on with Bobby Jay and I and told us, hey, you know, I really like him. We had Dad met up at a function, and he said, I want to work with him. And I think he worked with him a little bit last year, but he's been working with Cole quite a bit on just sort of making sure the swing is right, so to speak, as a kicker, and also between the ears. Marty's always told me that's the biggest thing with a kicker. A lot of guys can kick, but he said, you know, it's when they miss a few, he said, it becomes like a golfer. Then, you know, then you really off. And I think that's one of the things that, you know, I wouldn't want to work with anybody more than Marty, who really has perfected that. And we were talking about this. This had to be 88 or 87, 88, we did a long interview, and he brought it up to me that he was seeing a counselor in the off season on kicking the ball, going through the motions, in essence, kicking the ball before he actually kicked it.
Okay.
Going through this training
mental
with
imagery.
His mind. And that was unheard of. People laughed at him, said, man, Martin, what's going on? You got issues? He's like, no, I don't have issues. I want to stay at the top of my game. And we had a good laugh about it because I remember that was people were asking him, hey, what's wrong, Martin? You got a problem? No, Martin, he didn't have too many problems back in 87.
No. Everybody used to laugh when Tiger Woods would go lift weights. What are you doing? Well, how did that turn out? So same thing with Morton Anderson. Mike Dettillier, kind enough to join us. Does LSU have the talent in the right places to compete with the big boys next season, in your opinion?
I think the three teams that have pulled away from the field have been Alabama, Clemson, and Georgia. Can LSU be the four team? I think they've got as good a shot as anyone. But they're in the hunt. And you look at the key positions at quarterback, if you can get Chase on back healthy, the corner positions. You're going to need a little bit of help. And we still have some unknown at the running back spot, because that's something, no matter what all this change, Ed's still going to run the ball.
Yes. You know, do they have a bell cow?
I do know where he grew up. I do know where he played his high school ball and where he went to college and where he coached. Running the football is still important to him.
Yeah,
and a physical brand of ball, how Emory and Tyron Davis-Price, how they'll turn out to be. But Jordy, everybody's got a weakness somewhere, okay?
Yeah.
There is no college team who's perfect. But they have closed the gap here. And again, it comes down to that Texas game early. And boy, if you can win that one, you can build some momentum up. You have Florida who's giving you some issues, but you got them at home. Mm-hmm. And then certainly Alabama, and you got them on the road. And eventually, come on, you gotta win one.
Yeah.
You have to win one.
Yeah.
And that's the only way Ed and LSU can kind of kick this stick off their shoulder. They got to go out and win one. But they do have certainly pieces in place here that will give them an opportunity. And I do think the final game against A&M, which I think that's going to end up being a huge game and a rivalry game, not only by how the connections with Jimbo here, but also how it ended a year ago. That's going to be some major carryover into this year. A&M's schedule this year is difficult. I got to talk to Jimbo, and he go through that schedule, and a lot of that is on the road. It's a little bit more challenging than it was, say, a year ago when most of those games were at home, and he loses the two key pieces offensively in Trevion Williams at running back and Jay Sternberger at tight end.
Yeah, I'm with you. Mike Dottiglia, the M&D Draft Report. LSU schedule much, much more favorable this year. Devin White's not replaceable. I understand that. You're going to have to do it by committee. But Dave Aranda's smart. He's got those two big behemoths now that in Ika and Rankins. That's what he really wants, that big stuff the run, stuff the gaps, and let your linebackers run and make plays, right? So Aranda must be thrilled.
Yeah, and, you know, when Jacob comes back, he's got a chance to be a special player. You know, you just saw his talents and his ability to get around blocks. He's physical. He's a really good open field tackler, and he drops back well in coverage. And then Mike Divinity and what he's been able to do. And what I think you'll see, and I'm not giving any trade secrets away, but what I think what they're going to do is have Divinity play inside on first and second down, and then him rush the quarterback on third. Listen, don't take a rocket scientist to figure that one out.
Yeah, that's right.
And then they're going to put Divinity and Chase on each side, and I think at times you'll see Andre Anthony, who's made a lot of improvement as a player. I think that part of him learning how to use his arms and hands a little bit better as a technician has come through. But boy, Mike Divinity, he's got a chance to be an early round pick, and his versatility now comes into play here. It's a lot different playing inside linebacker than outside linebacker. Your angles to the ball carrier are different because you're coming off the edge. It's, you know, you're using your speed and you're just flashing through. As an inside linebacker, there's maybe a little bit of figuring out exactly where that ball carrier is going, and a lot quicker because it's straight. But, man, he's picked it up extremely well. Dave's been thrilled with him. Coach O has just talked worlds about how well Mike Divinity has come around. But the secondary and how they're going to use all those guys and being able to play a lot of nickel and dime on teams that will spread you out. They have that ability this year, certainly, and if Fulton's back healthy, I think last year he was unbelievable down the stretch until he got hurt, and you got Stingley. Kelvin Joseph has made a lot of improvement there. Kerry Vincent's going to play in the nickel, and then certainly you got one of the signature players in college football in Grant Delpit.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
Jacoby Stevens, they're going to move him all around too. And I think also Harris, who's really made a lot of improvement at that safety position. I remember before he even came in, Coach O told me, Mike, he's going to be a star for us one day. He said, I think he's that good, he's going to be a star. And it came down on that scholarship to either Harris or Amik Robertson from Thibodeau, who's now been a two-time all-conference player at Tech.
Yeah, a pretty good player.
And listen, I was big, borrow, steal, whatever I had to do to get him to go to LSU. to get Ed to understand, because Les had courted him but hadn't offered. And then once Ed got the job, they offered, but Tech was way ahead of the game at that point.
Right.
Eddie Meek wanted to play. And I'll never forget Frank Monica telling me something. I did a touchdown club meeting there, and he said, Mike, I played against Odell Beckham at Isadora Newman, and Amik Robertson's a better high school player than Odell Beckham.
Wow. Amazing. Mike Dettillier, stories for years. All right, let's go over the draft. If who's the best player? Who's the best football player?
Quinnen Williams from Alabama for me.
Okay.
I just thought last year at that position, he's playing over the – he's a nose guard. He was dominating. I mean, every play, and you were trying to block him. And it was difficult because he's one of those special talents as a player. And you see, you don't get that often from an interior player. So Quinnen would be my number one guy. Nick Bosa didn't play a lot of football last year, but when he did, he was a dominating guy. And then they all sort of jammed in after that with Rashawn Gary, Montez Sweat, Josh Allen at 3, 4, 5. All those guys defensively. And then Devin 7. So only Kyler Murray sort of gets in between all of that. So 6 of the top 7 players on the defensive side of the football. But Quinnen Williams separated himself from the group. And it's rare that you get an interior player that just totally controlled things up front. And did we hear anything from Quinnen Williams the year before?
No.
He was a rotational player.
Yes.
And what just great strides. And a lot of people don't know this, but actually Pete Jenkins, who after he left LSU, he became, sort of a counselor.
Consultant.
He'd go from school to school.
Yeah.
And he worked with Josh Allen at Kentucky, who's going to end up being a top 4 pick. But he also spent 9 days at Alabama. And he told me afterwards, man, the guy there in Quinnen Williams, he going to be difficult for people to take a hold of. And, man, he was absolutely right.
Is Greedy Williams still going in the first round?
Yeah, I think so. Okay. I think that the misperception we had was that every year that was always that corner that would go in the top 12 or 10. And, I hear some of these guys nationally say, well, we took a look at film and he doesn't tackle. Well, what? LSU has played on TV the last 2 years. You couldn't figure out that Greedy's not a good open field tackler by now? Oh, good gracious. It goes to show how little they watch these games. It was always obvious that Greedy, and he's admitted that, he needs to get stronger. He needs to be a better open field tackler. But his size, his length, his long arms, he plays the ball like a receiver. But like every other corner and safety in this draft class, he's going to wait because the big men are going to get taken ahead of him. So it's pushed him into the 20s in round one, along with Byron Murphy from Washington, DeAndre Baker from Georgia. Those guys, it's just sort of jammed them. It's not that they did anything wrong. It's just the big man theory comes into play here. And two, in the NFL, either you got a quarterback or you're looking for one. And they're going to have four quarterbacks go off the board by the first 20 picks.
Wow. Who's the third LSU player drafted?
Oh, it'll be Foster Morrow.
Okay.
I think that he was a guy when the season started, you probably looked at him more as a late-round pick. excuse me. But his blocking skills, his ability to pass protect, when he was a good run block, he played on special teams, great leader. He was sure-handed when they threw it to him, but he's only caught 46 passes the last 2 years. We didn't see him used in that short, intermediate part of the game. Listen, LSU won't say it, but how obvious is it? They had to keep him in to help protect Joe Burrow. Come on, either that or he's staring at stadiums across America.
Yeah.
The offensive line couldn't protect him at times without help either from a back or a tight end. He shocked me in how well he could run. And he's worked with a track coach and has gotten him better. He was always a good athlete, though. And so I knew he would test pretty well. I didn't know he would test that well. But I always sort of had a feeling he would test pretty well. He catches the ball well. He's a leader. He's focused. This means a lot to him. You know, you think about, he was sort of one of the last guys to get that scholarship. He was headed to Tulane.
Yeah. Yeah.
His mom had been an athlete at Tulane.
Right.
He was headed there. And then the final moments, it got an opening, and they brought Foster in. And I think he ends up being a late third or early fourth round pick. And he's a good all around player. He's going to start
and great in the locker room. Doesn't cause any issues. And that's so important. Mike,
he's
I could do this
leader,
forever.
Jordy.
Yep.
That,
yep.
Listen,
no doubt.
You can't create that. Either you have that ability or you don't. And he was one of the guys last year when there was a lot of turbulence in the summer. Mm-hmm. With guys leaving, guys getting in trouble.
Yep.
And, man, you could kind of feel the earth shake under you a little bit.
Yeah.
Foster was one of the guys that said, this ain't happening. You know, we're going to control what we can control. Whatever happens with someone else, you know, we have no control over that. But we're still a good football team. And he was one of the leaders in that locker room that sort of took control. People say, well, the coach takes control. No, not in the locker room, he don't. That's a player deal.
Right.
They take control of that. And you being a former athlete, you understand that. You know, it's not the boss. It's basically the guys. They took
That's
over.
Right.
And Foster was one of those type people.
Mike, I could do this all day, man. Thank you so much. Enjoy the weekend. Enjoy the Masters. And I got a phone call from your boy, Charlie Como. What's Charlie want with me? Can you believe that? Your boy.
Oh, that ain't good.
Uh-oh.
What Charlie going to call you.
That's trouble.
You don't owe him money or nothing, do you?
No, I do not. I do not.
Okay.
I do not. Take care, Mike. See you
Thank
soon,
you,
buddy. All right. We'll come up and wrap things up for hour number one next.
And it's right here on the Jordy Hartford Show on 103.7 The Game.
All right, we welcome you back 54 minutes after the hour on a beautiful middle of the week Wednesday. Yesterday we had Kim Mulkey, the national championship head coach of the Baylor Bears women's basketball program. And during that interview, we had talked about her son, Kramer Robertson, who was calling her right upon the conclusion of the game. And she said to us, well, he's got a pretty big day because he's going to go up. He's in the St. Louis Cardinals minor league farm system. And he's going to be hitting against Clayton Kershaw. When healthy, one of the best pitchers, rehab situation with the LA Dodgers. So last night, Kramer Robertson at back, Clayton Kershaw on the hill, and this is what happened.
Kramer Robertson, the first pitch in there for a strike from Clayton Kershaw. Kramer Robertson reached on a fielder's choice in the third inning. Right-handed batter, Kershaw to the plate. Swinging a deep drive to left field. Going back is Rex, and this one is gone. A home run. Kramer Robertson of the Cardinals hits a line drive home run into the Busch Terrace in left field, and the game is tied 1-1.
What a thrill. How about that? He can take that one to the bank forever. So Kramer Robertson getting it done. Hour number one is done. Coming up in hour number two, we'll head back to Augusta. Alex Myers, Golf Digest, will talk about some of the changes to Augusta National and who he likes and what is the Tiger effect again this year. The par three contest going on as we speak. How about Jack Nicklaus and Gary Player and Tom Watson all together with a packed house as they're knocking the ball around and Jack taps in for another par. How about that? So Alex Myers will join us. And then Hump Day with Huguenin, Michael Huguenin on spring football. We'll recap the national championship college basketball game, talk about some of the hirings in college hoops, and much, much more. We're just halfway done. We got a busy second hour that always starts with hot topics. After this, when we return to the Jordy Helper Show on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
97 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pulled off another miracle.
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Touchdown,
streaming live on the 103.7 The Game mobile app and online at 103.7thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won.
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 103.7 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
Great to be with you. Hour number two, and away we go on a beautiful Chamber of Commerce Day this Wednesday, April the 10th. A busy second hour planned for you and yours. So without further ado, let's lead off the hour as we always do. We take our daily walk around the sports water cooler. CD, hit that button.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
Good afternoon, CD. How are you, buddy?
I am doing fantastic, Jordy. It is a beautiful day, as you put it. My goodness, I cannot ask for a better
day. Bottle it up, and let's save it forever. All right, let's go. What you got, big boy?
All right, Jordy, we got a lot to get to. Of course, the biggest storyline of the day involves the Los Angeles Lakers, Magic Johnson, bouncing out of La La Land. And it made me think, Jordy, which franchise, front office, however you want to wind up putting it, which is more unstable right now, the Los Angeles Lakers or the New Orleans Pelicans?
Ooh-wee. God, that's a great question. Can I make it a dead heat?
I mean, I don't see why not, Jordy. I mean, it's all up to you.
they're both kind of going down the commode a little bit, but golly, I see more. I don't know. I can't answer. They're both right here, right now, as of today. They're both down in the tubes. Yes,
and I'd have to agree with you, Jordy. They're all down the same tube. But man, oh man, I feel like the Pelicans definitely have a chance to kind of turn some things around. It's going to take a little while. After all, you're going to wind up more likely than not losing Anthony Davis. You got about a 26% chance, last I saw, of getting a top four pick. Obviously, the chances of getting a number one pick, slim to none, and Slim has already left the building at this point.
Yeah, but
you got to think about it, Jordy. The Pelicans, it's going to take some time to get them going. The Lakers, they just need one more star player, as Magic Johnson put it, and they could wind up getting into contention in the Western Conference again.
Big if.
Jordy. Yeah. But, of course, that wasn't the only thing going on in the world of the NBA. I felt like Magic Johnson might have been upstaging what was going on with the final game of Dwayne Wade and also Dirk Nowitzki, wound up finally saying after what it felt like forever that this was going to be his final game of his career. It got me thinking, better send-off last night, Dirk or D-Wade?
Well, D-Wade tried to jump on the scorer's table like he always did after championships, and he fell down. Come on, D-Wade. Plus, they played no D. They let Dwayne get 30 points. I mean, it was worse than the NBA All-Star game, the Philadelphia 76ers and the effort they put out. I love Mark Cuban's scream. We're going to put up an amazing statue for you. So that was pretty cool. But both Hall of Famers, no question, no doubt. Both won championships for their respective franchises. Both spent a lot of years there. So good for both of them. The league will miss them, but the league always moves on. But two great players. Two great players.
Exactly, Jordy. You brought that up. They're undoubtedly Hall of Famers, but will they be both first ballot Hall of Famers?
No question. There is no question. They're no doubt.
And, Jordy, you know, we always like to have fun talking about, of course, the NOLA no call that happened back in January. We've talked about it on end, but we've heard about it multiple times, how you'll never quite get over it. Well, it's safe to say Drew Brees is having a lot of fun with it. I don't know if you saw this or not, but he had an Untuckit commercial. He's a big investor on it, and he actually had a commercial where he poked a little fun at the NOLA no call. How great is that, Jordy?
I love it. He's the best. Speaking of wardrobe, What about Anthony Davis? What did you see the T-shirt he wore for the last game?
That's all, folks.
I mean, and he says, I don't pick out my clothes. Somebody lays my clothes out for me. I just put them on. I mean, what a bunch of garbage is that?
Seriously. It's ridiculous, Jordy, but it got me thinking, is this all him? Everybody wants to say it's him, basically saying I'm going to wind up doing what I want and going wherever I'm going to wind up going. But I feel like this was him saying, hey, I'm part of Space Jam 2, y'all.
It's, you know, he could have worn it on the second to last home game, or he could have worn it on the road.
Yeah.
But he saves it and wears it in the last game of the regular season. Come on, AD, yeah. Stop it. Stop it. That's ridiculous.
That was just like one of the weirdest things I had seen.
Oh, my God. What's he thinking? Well, I guess he can think whatever he wants to think. He's a multi-gazillionaire, so who cares, right? And he's 25, 26 years old, please.
Oh, yeah, Jordy. That was...
God,
and you're talking
that's
about,
all, folks.
You're talking about what were they thinking, Jordy? I know you're a Cardinals fan. Did you not see the Marcell Ozuna, I don't know what you would call it, a lapse of judgment? But my goodness, that was an absolute mess. Had you seen that, Jordy?
I have not seen it, no.
All right, basically, no. All right, Jordy.
Give me the info.
All right, Jordy. Marcell Ozuna during the ball game, looked like he was going to try and rob a home run, wound up hopping onto the wall to try and rob it.
Okay, yeah.
He realizes the ball's not going that far. He jumps off and lands face first. The ball's just like, he completely misses it. And it basically is making the not top 10 list for the next like year.
That's forever. Yes. Yeah. Oh, that's classic. That's almost as good as the Jose Canseco ball hits him off the head and bounces all over the wall for a home run. So that's two classics. Way to go. Yeah, that's called great judgment. Wow.
Exactly.
Amazing.
It's just a whole mess with the Cardinals right now, Jordy. But my goodness.
Easy.
But like I said, 30 seconds left, Jordy. But what's the, like, you talked about Jose Canseco, Marcell Ozuna? What's the best blooper you ever seen in sports history?
Oh my God, I think the Canseco thing is the top of my list. I mean, the ball hits him off the head, and then goes for a home run. Oh my God, I can't. How about Carl Lewis trying to sing the national anthem?
Uh-oh.
How about the mayor of Cincinnati trying to throw it from 60 feet 6 inches, not on the mound, to home plate, and it goes exit stage left? There's a bunch of them. There's a bunch of great ones.
There's a lot of them. I mean, how can we not bring up Mark Sanchez, the butt fumble, Jordy?
The butt fumble,
that's
yes.
That's undisputedly like one of the greatest moments.
That's a classic. All right, there you have it. You're a Hot Topics for the day, brought to you by the best hot sauce every day, and that is Cajun Chef Hot Sauce. Do yourself a flavor. Bring some Cajun Chef Hot Sauce with you wherever you go, because everything tastes better with Cajun Chef on it. Live to Augusta, Alex Myers, Golf Digest next.
Taking the hottest topics and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game.
Oh, a tradition unlike any other. The long wait for another season of golf majors is about to be over, and the first one of the year, the Masters, comes complete with all types of possibilities. Spring is here, the azaleas are blooming, and Tiger Woods is the talk of the town. What else is new? Alex Myers, Golf Digest, live from Augusta National, kind enough to join us. Well, Alex, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing great, Jordy. How's it going?
It's going great. So tell me, as you approach yet another season of golf majors and Augusta's there, what's the storyline for you this year?
Well, you already said Tiger Woods, and it's hard not to start with him. You know, it's pretty amazing that just 2 years ago at the Champions Dinner, he whispered to Nick Faldo, "I'm done." Then last year he returns, and now at this Champions Dinner last night, he's the highest ranked player at that dinner in the room. So it's been an incredible comeback, as we all know, by Tiger. He was at one point the favorite. He is not the favorite now, but he's still one of those guys that seems to be on everyone's list if you're picking five guys, six guys. And certainly there's been nothing that he's shown either this week, either with a, you know, pretty relaxed press conference yesterday or, you know, what we've seen from him on the range or anything else that's made people not pick him. So I think, you know, obviously we start with him, but there's certainly a ton of other great storylines, but you do have to start with Tiger. That's just the way it is.
That's the way it rolls. Alex, you mentioned five or six names that everybody's picking. Let's go through those names. Who are they?
Well, you know, obviously Rory McIlroy jumps out with everybody. Yeah. He's played the best golf of anyone this year. He's playing the best golf of his career, at least if you look at the strokes gained statistics. Of course, he hasn't been piling up the wins, but he did finally break through at the Players, which, of course, is the biggest event up to this point. So you have to think that, you know, in the biggest event, he'll rise to the occasion. Now, you know, I think we always focus a little too much on what he hasn't done at Augusta National, which, of course, is win. But he is the only person here this week who's finished in the top 10 the past five seasons. So, you know, he's got a very, very good track record here. And, you know, maybe not as much on Sundays here, but where he's had disappointing finish last year in the final pairing and obviously in 2011 when he blew the four-shot lead when he was 21 years old. But he's certainly been knocking on the door here, and he'd like nothing more, obviously, than to not answer any more questions about trying to complete the career Grand Slam. This is his fifth try already at it, so he's certainly deserving of that favorite status.
Alex Myers, Golf Digest. We talked about some of the contenders. Brooks Koepka's lost a lot of weight, and it looks like his game has been lost as well. What the heck is going on with him?
It's one of the most bizarre storylines ever. You know, a few weeks ago, he came out and hinted that he was on a diet for something, and he couldn't wait till Wednesday because he would be able to eat a cheeseburger again. And everybody was like, what the heck is he talking about?
Yeah.
And, you know, it sounds like through the grapevine, through speculation, through everything else, that, you know, it was for a photo shoot for the ESPN body issue.
Oh, my
he
gosh.
Wanted to get extra lean to,
oh,
you know, for that issue. And yeah, you know, it seems the reaction is, oh, my gosh, yeah, you know, Brando Chambly kind of took him apart last night. You know, it's a bizarre choice because obviously this is a guy who was at the peak of his sport, winning player of the year, winning two of the past three majors. You know, you expect him to eventually knock on the door at Augusta. It hasn't really happened yet, but he's kind of trending in the right direction. And for him to do something like this is interesting. Now, it's not like he hasn't played terribly this year. He did almost win the Honda Classic, but the stats do show that he's lost a little pop off the tee, and even Brooks has said it's because of the lack of the weight and maybe some strength. So hopefully he's had a few weeks to, you know, eat a few burgers, you know, pound a few more weights or whatever he does and bulk back up, because he's actually, I saw him slip to 30-1, and I actually put a few bucks on him because, I mean, you know, we're talking about a guy who's won three of the last seven majors and two of the last three, and you're getting 30-1 odds on him. So I still think he's a threat, but yeah, certainly it's a weird storyline.
Vanity, my goodness, the name of vanity. Wow. A name I don't hear much about, but I'm just telling you, when it comes to Augusta, I never count Jordan Spieth out. Why don't I count him out?
Yeah, because he's never out of it here. A track record through 5 years that, you know, is almost unrivaled. Maybe, you know, some would say the best first 5 years ever at the Masters, you know, worst finish of a T11, you know, two runners up, a win, obviously, you know, another finish where, you know, obviously looked like he was going to win back to back just a few years ago. And even last year, he came in slumping as well, but, you know, turned it on, shot, you know, that final round 64, almost came back and caught Patrick Reed. So it does seem like this is the one place where no matter how he's playing, he's able to step up. He really rises to the occasion here. Now, that being said, the slump he's in this year is even worse than last year. And, you know, it looked like he might break out of it this past weekend at the Valero. He was in the final group on Saturday, and he shot a 42 on the front nine, shot himself out of the tournament. So he's made a ton of birdies this year. The putting actually looks okay. Not necessarily the short putting, but he's made a lot of good putts. It's just he is hitting some horrendous tee shots and making, you know, a double bogey or a triple bogey once or twice a round, and that's just killing him.
Alex Myers, Golf Digest. Every year there's talk about how the course has changed, what Augusta National has done. Is that the case again this year?
Yeah, you know, the fifth hole is getting a lot of talk. It was already one of the tougher holes at uphill 455-yarder dogleg left. It's been lengthened by 40 yards.
Ooh.
So it's 495. And, you know, Dustin Johnson yesterday said that during one of the practice rounds when it was a back pin, he hit driver 4-iron into this hole. And so, you know, Dustin Johnson will go years without using his 4-iron. So that just shows you how long it can play. So, you know, it's going to be interesting. Now, some of the players like it because it takes the decision on off the tee kind of out of their heads. I mean, you just hit driver. It's that long of a hole. You kind of have to hit driver. But you have to keep it right because there are those cavernous bunkers on the left, and the bigger hitters were starting to be able to fly them, and clearly the folks here at Augusta National didn't take too kindly to that, so because that's not what the design of the hole is supposed to be. So there's no one going to be flying them this year. You got to go around them or come up short of them. So that's going to be interesting. Another minor tweak that we found out today from the chairman, Fred Ridley, was the 18th green was rebuilt. And as a result of that, there's more area on the back right portion that could be used for a potential hole location. So we might see a new hole location, or maybe there used to be a long time ago used back there. We might see a different hole location than what we've seen in recent years, at least. So that's something to keep an eye on as well.
All right. Alex Myers, Golf Digest. What's more a given? Tiger Woods will be in contention or Sunday, or Fred Couples will have us buzzing for two rounds? He does it every year, doesn't he?
It does. I don't know how many times I've written the phrase Fred Couples turns back the clock at Augusta.
Yeah.
I mean, you're right. It's every year to the point where you can't even call it turning back the clock because the clock has never gone forward here for him. So, yeah, that's a good question. Unfortunately, Fred really has just not been playing hardly at all anywhere. So I would have to lean with the Tiger pick.
Okay.
Again, you know, I'm not picking him to win,
right. But
he has gotten back to this very consistent style where if it is not a shootout, because I don't think he likes to be in a shootout anymore. I think he likes the more, you know, grind out a two under par type day. If it's that kind of a tournament where 8 under, maybe 10 under wins, I would be shocked if he's not at least 5-6 under par by the end of the week and kind of on that board somewhere.
Boy, CBS wants nothing more than that.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, let's be honest. You know, we saw Nicholas win in his 40s. Is there a, you know, Phil Mickelson, he's 48. He won at Pebble Beach in February. Vijay Singh almost won at the Honda. You got people like Bernhard Langer, Jose Maria Olafable. Any older generation guy you believe in this year?
Yeah, I mean, well, do you count Tiger at 43?
Yeah, that's true.
But no, I mean, Phil, I think Phil's the guy still who could get it done. He came out at the start of this year. I don't know if he was motivated by that big win against Tiger in the match or whatever it was, but he almost won one event, won another. He hasn't done anything the last few weeks, but you know, I think he could still get it done here. I think he's hitting it incredibly long for his age, and that's going to be a key. It's always a key here, but that's going to be even more important this week now that they got so much rain on Monday and Tuesday. The course is playing longer. So of all the older guys, you know, certainly Phil, he knows how to play this course with three green jackets. But I could see him having a good week. I'd still, if I was picking Tiger or Phil, I'd probably still go with Tiger. But no, I think Phil is positioned to have a nice week as well.
Alex, you can't win it on Friday and Saturday. Seems like it always comes down to the back nine on Sunday. So look, take us there, and who do you like in this thing? How do you see this thing unfolding?
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting. I just have kind of had a feeling all year for some reason about Jon Rahm. And, you know, I know he kind of threw the players away with that bizarre decision and the fairway bunker and the whole, you know, yelling with the caddy. And that, you know, people said, oh, he's not ready to win. But I think that kind of threw people off the scent. I look at his stats. I like how he's playing all aspects of his game. I think, you know, if he's he's going to win majors. Obviously, he's a great player. He's only 24, but this is the course that probably sets up best for him. And last year in his second go round here, he was in the mix down the stretch on Sunday till he found the water on 15. So, I just think that his time's going to come. I think, you know, for a big guy, he's an incredible putter. And, so he has the rare combination of the length and that touch around the greens does really well here.
It sets up. Can I tell you, I love when it's sunny. I hope where I am that it rains on Sunday, so I can't have no outdoor activities. How's this sound to you? The Masters final round leading up to, I've got two shows that I love to watch, Billions on Showtime, followed by the start of Game of Thrones on HBO. Yeah. Now, that's a Sunday, Alex. That's a Sunday.
That could be an all-time Sunday, no doubt about it. I think people are salivating at home to watch that. That could be great. But, yeah, you're right. I hope, and I think there's a little rain in the forecast here for Sunday. Hopefully it's nothing crazy. Hopefully it's nothing like it was Monday night into yesterday. Hopefully that's gotten out of the way. And yeah, hopefully we can all just kind of sit back and enjoy whatever's happening now. You know, it's interesting because there's so many guys who, you know, you want to pick and think will do well. And I just think it's about as wide open as we've ever seen before. So it's shaping up to be a really fun week.
What did last year's winner have for the champion's dinner? I mean, he's got some Baton Rouge roots. He's not playing very well, Patrick Reed. But what was on the menu? Do you remember?
Yeah, he had a bone-in ribeye. What do you call it? Prime rib, bone-in ribeye, something like that. It was a big piece of meat, put it down. Nice. Big piece of beef. And you know what I really liked about his menu? He had creamed corn and cream spinach. I mean, that is...
That's
quite a
double header.
The poor arteries of these guys at this dinner last night. But I've had cream corn and I've had cream spinach, but never at the same time. That sounds like a little overindulgence. But yeah, that I wish I'd been there. That sounds like a really good meal.
You're the best, Alex. Enjoy a tradition unlike any other, as they say.
That's right.
Enjoy it. Have fun, man. And thank you so much.
Oh, thanks for having me on, Jordy. Take care.
Okay, buddy, you take care. Alex Myers, he likes Jon Rahm, and we'll see how it all unfolds. Today is the par 3 contest, and tomorrow they start playing for real. Can't wait. We'll take a timeout when we come back. Michael Hugonen, Hump Day Edition, next.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is a state. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
Uh-oh. Guess what day it is.
It's time to break down the biggest storylines this week with Michael Hugonen of The Athletic. What's up, Michael?
Mike. What day is it, Mike? Hump Day!
Ah, yes, indeed. Hump Day means Hugonen, no question, The Athletic, and there's lots to talk about when it comes to the SEC, both in spring football and on the basketball court. A couple of new hires, one that didn't leave and one that did come in. So let's get busy. Mike, good afternoon, my friend. How are you?
Doing well.
Were you surprised that Rick Barnes said no to UCLA and leveraged the deal to a better deal for himself in Knoxville?
I think if he were younger, he might have gone to UCLA. A lot more pressure at UCLA with basketball than there is at UT. I still think UCLA is a better job than Tennessee, but I think all things being equal, he's happy where he is. He took Tennessee on a nice run in the NCAA tournament. They're a factor again in the SEC race, which hasn't happened in a while, and he got a raise out of it. So a less stressful job than he could have had for more money. That's a no-brainer decision.
UCLA went for some big ones. They end up with Mick Cronin from Cincinnati. What was the major non-selling point for UCLA? They went after a lot of good ones, but they couldn't snag the ones they really wanted.
Yeah, I think there's a general prevailing wisdom that the athletic director there, Dan Guerrero, is not all that good. UCLA is not a school that spends a lot of money on its coaches. L.A. is an extremely expensive area in which to live.
Yeah.
And I think UCLA, I don't think they're necessarily like a Kentucky or Duke or North Carolina or Kansas anymore where they expect Final Four runs, but I still think there is some pressure. No longer the best program in the Pac-12. That's probably part of the appeal of the job as well. But I think UCLA is it's like Nebraska football. It's a once great job has fallen out of favor in a way.
Makes perfect sense. Arkansas went out from their family, and I really like Eric Musselman. I think he's a terrific coach. What did you think of that hire to
Arkansas?
I think
he's a good coach. It's going to be interesting to see from a recruiting standpoint. He relied extensively on transfers at Nevada. I don't think you can build a program in the SEC doing that. Can he recruit well enough? The makeup of his staff is going to be important. He's not going to, I think, go away from his reliance on transfers. But instead of having four or five starters who are transfers, maybe it's just one or two. That's going to be an interesting cultural fit as well. I think Brett Bielema showed that, okay, Brett Bielema was a good football coach. Didn't necessarily ever fit at Nebraska. At Arkansas, and I'm wondering the same thing about Eric Musselman.
All right, very interesting. I thought it was a heck of a national championship game myself. I mean, I know it started off slowly, but I thought it had me on the edge of my seat the rest of the night.
Yeah, tremendous game. And there's been a couple memorable ones of late. The NCAA title game this decade rarely has failed to deliver.
Yes.
These teams played, you're right, the first 5 minutes you're like, my goodness, first team to 40 wins. But then while both teams play really high-level defense and on every possession, they're well-coached and they got smart players. So they have those players adjusted, the coaches adjusted, and the offense has got cranked up a little bit. Some big-time individual plays on both sides. I thought it was an extremely entertaining title game to cap off an extremely entertaining NCAA tournament. From the Elite Eight on, every single game was interesting in the final minute, and that's a rarity of late, frankly.
It was one of the best tournaments from top to bottom that I've seen in quite a while. It was spectacular with really no super Cinderella, but it was still captivating from start to finish. Michael Hugan and The Athletic, kind enough to join us. All right. Spring football. When I say spring football, what pops out to you from what you've seen, heard, whatever?
No huge injuries. Though Oklahoma may have lost a starting linebacker, Caleb Kelly, for maybe the first month of the season, and given the fact that Oklahoma plays cruddy defense and you've lost a projected starter, that's a big deal. SEC-wise, though, the actual games themselves, the only thing people really can see on TV are the spring games.
Yeah.
Extremely vanilla. You can't really glean much. And this is a time of year where coaches generally are pleased with what's going on. The biggest takeaway for me so far is no huge injuries, and that's always a gigantic positive. I think there's six or seven SEC spring games this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Including Alabama, including Florida. Georgia is next weekend. That'll be the last one in the SEC. I think that, again, the stuff you hear about rather than see is the more intriguing stuff. You know, teams, the coaches are admitting they're putting in more four receiver sets. Or the coaches are admitting they're changing some players around. They want to see how this guy looks as the outside receiver. Maybe he fits best in the slot, but they may have some different formations for him, all that kind of stuff. So, I think it's been a pretty uninteresting spring practice on some respects. But, again, there's a lot of also tinkering going on that we're not going to see until the first weekend or the last weekend in August or maybe game two or game three of the season.
Who's got anybody in the league have a quarterback competition? It seems like a lot of schools are already set in stone who do they have. Are there some quarterback competitions worth noting?
Well, I'm still interested in seeing what happens at Kentucky, Missouri, and Vandy in the SEC East, and Auburn in the SEC West. You know, I've said 100 times on your show that I think Malzahn's offense is as quarterback-centric as any offense in the country.
True, true.
He can't have a quarterback who's merely good. He has to have a quarterback who can make plays. And for all of Jarrett Stidham's positives, he really wasn't a playmaking quarterback. Mm-hmm. So do they have one on their roster? If they don't, Malzahn ain't going to be coaching Auburn next year. So that's a lot more intriguing that, you know, what's Vandy going to do to replace Shurmur? What's Kentucky going to do? How's Missouri going to replace Drew Locke? Those are mildly interesting, but I'll be honest, those are, to me, teams that aren't going to finish any higher than fourth at best in the East. Auburn potentially could be maybe a second or third place team in the West, or maybe a fifth or sixth place team in the West, and it all depends on how their quarterback's going to play.
Michael Hughlin, The Athletic, kind enough to join us. The NFL thinks highly of the SEC. I'm heard about 19 players being invited to New York for the draft process. That says an awful lot.
Yeah, it does. And I think the NFL, I think people have this, ooh, look at some of the guys they're inviting. Ooh, that's going to be, you know, you could have a long-time green room experience. That's going to be, the cameras will be focused on that guy. The NFL doesn't care about that. They genuinely pick guys to come up there that are seen as, I would say, likely first-round picks. So some of these guys are locks, some are likely, and they'll end up being interesting green room hangers-on. But, that's an impressive number, and it is a big deal. I mean, I think, you know, the old days, that, you know, 25 years ago, the draft wasn't nearly as big as it is now. Now it's a three-month build-up. It's like the Academy Awards. You got photographers taking photos of these guys as they walk into where the draft is held. So it's become a bigger deal, and to be invited is something that's a special invitation, no question.
I greatly overdid the number. It's actually 11 SEC players still.
That's
11
players.
That's an awful lot.
Potentially a third of the first round. I mean, that's an impressive number. And again, to be invited to the draft, it's a big deal. I can remember a couple of years ago, I forget, one of the quarterbacks who was invited just said, you know, I'm not going to go. I'm going to spend it at home with my I think it was Jameis Winston.
Yes.
I'm going to spend it at home with my family as I get picked, all that kind of stuff. That's cool, too.
What a missed opportunity.
But a lot of guys like going. They like the attention. And, it's an interesting experience for a draftee.
And it's usually, it's a lot of times it's defensive linemen and cornerbacks, and that's kind of like the meat of the SEC up front and in the secondary. Am I inaccurate there?
You know, I think that's exactly. You know, Bosa is probably going to be the first defensive end off the board, first defensive lineman off the board. I think there's more teams that like Bosa than like Quinnen Williams because everything being equal, Bosa's a pass rusher. But you're right. In the SEC, you ask coaches around the country, you ask NFL folks around the country. One reason the SEC is so good is not only do they have star defensive linemen, they have good backup linemen on the defensive side of the ball. So a lot of SEC coaches put a great deal of emphasis on, hey, we got to get stud linemen. And stud linemen are a big deal for Alabama, LSU, Florida, Georgia, Auburn, the good teams in the SEC. And then you're right, corners. The SEC produces an inordinate amount of really high-level cornerbacks. That's because there's a lot of high-level cornerbacks who play high school ball in the Southeast. So not surprising that there's going to be a heck of a lot of SEC defensive linemen taken and some pretty high-level SEC defensive backs as well.
All right, so LSU spring game in the books, very, very, very vanilla, but they're really high on this coach that came from the Saints in Joe Brady. They think he's a game changer, but like everybody else, we're kind of like, okay, I'll believe it when I actually
when I see it,
when it counts.
Right, and I think of all the teams in the SEC, the one school that, okay, every year you hear stuff about LSU's offense. Okay, they're going to run more 3-4 and even 5 wide receiver sets. They're sprucing up the passing game. It's going to be a much more explosive passing game. And then you get psyched if you're a fan, to read about that and hear about that. And as a media folk, you're like, okay, this could be a really interesting team if this happened. And then the season comes around, and it sort of looks like the LSU offense in the last 5 years. So maybe this year is different. And you're right, they're bringing in a guy who has a background in pass offense. And even the most, even the dumbest football fan knows that LSU's passing attack has been an anvil around the program's neck.
Yes.
It drags them down. So if that passing attack is spruced up, it's going to make a big difference. And this is not like Auburn, where the quarterback has to be a big-time playmaker. If Joe Burrow can complete 60% of his passes, and cut back on his picks, if he has a 22-touchdown season, completes 60% of his passes, throws for 2,800 yards, and throws six picks, LSU's winning double-digit games and will be in the playoff hunt.
The question is,
can that happen? But I would also argue that as much as they need the pass offense to change, they also need to have a bell cow running back. And in that regard, I think John Emery is the most important freshman in the SEC, hands down, and one of the three or four most important freshmen in the nation, because you can talk and say and do all you can about the passing game, but if nobody respects your running game, your passing game is going to struggle to improve. So John Emery is hugely important.
Very well said. If that offense could just kind of carry its weight, there's always great athletes on the defensive side, and there's enough skill position people out there that get drafted year after year after year. I agree with you. That's potentially a national championship team if the offense can come into the new ages and deliver.
Exactly. And I think the talent level's there. Now, the pass rush on defense is a question, but it's the assumption is Chaisson's going to be the guy that does that. It's hard to replace Devin White. Mm-hmm. It's hard to replace Greedy Williams. But Grant Delpit is probably going to be the best safety in the country this fall. And while there's not going to be a linebacker as good as Devin White, there are some intriguing pieces there. There are definitely some intriguing pieces up front. The wide receiver core looks like it has some guys who can be legitimate playmakers. Now, I'm not talking about Calvin Ridley guys, but there's enough guys. Maybe this, instead of having one receiver, this is more like what Alabama was last year. They got three or four guys who, on any given play, can score on a 65-yard touchdown pass. Again, this is one of the more interesting teams nationally, because maybe this is the season that the passing game is not an anvil. Maybe it's actually a positive. And if it's a positive, again, LSU's going to be in the playoff picture into November.
I'm going to make an early feel for this, and I'm going to agree with it's going to be a difference maker for this team this year. I just kind of sense it and see it, and I think Burrow's the key. And I think he is going to work his tail off and become a really, really good SEC quarterback. I'm not talking NFL quarterback.
That's the thing. The
AJ McCarron, the guy that's just going to make winning plays for you. I really believe that.
And cut down on the mistakes. Exactly. And you look at the rest of the SEC West. Arkansas is not good. Auburn's a gigantic mystery. Ole Miss will not be good. Mississippi State's going to take a half step back. So that leaves Alabama, LSU, and Texas A&M. Now, Texas A&M presumably is going to be better year two under Jimbo. They're also looking for a running back. I don't know if they have anybody as talented as Emery. That's another team that has talented wide receivers. But overall, defensively, LSU is more talented than Texas A&M.
This is
going to be an interesting SEC West race, because I think there's three teams that are at least a half a lap ahead of everybody else in that division, and that's Alabama, LSU, and Texas A&M. The question is, are they all a full lap ahead, or is Alabama the only one that's a full lap ahead, and LSU and A&M are a half lap ahead? That's the thing we're going to have to figure out, obviously, when the season comes.
We got a ways to go before it all starts, but it's going to be some kind of fun ride again. So anyway, Michael, always a pleasure, buddy. We'll recap the the seven or so spring games that take place this weekend, and we greatly appreciate your time, buddy. Have a great week.
You too. Appreciate it. Thanks.
All right. Michael Hugenin, The Athletic. Take a time out. Come and wrap this baby up. This is the Jordy Helfert Show on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Helfert Show on 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the app.
All right, welcome back. Yeah, what a fun show. My goodness gracious. Outstanding. Hope you enjoyed it half as much as we did bringing it to you. It's a beautiful, beautiful day, and can't wait for the start of the Masters. Cannot wait. Cannot wait. Really looking forward to that. So stay tuned. Stay tuned. All right, let's get busy. History lesson time. We go back to April 10th, the year 1993, a record that still stands today. The Pittsburgh Penguins beat the New York Rangers to extend their winning streak to 17 games, 17 straight wins, which set an NHL record that still stands today. The Penguins on this day, April 10th, the year 1993. All right, if today is your birthday, April 10th, happy birthday. You share it with the likes of happy 82nd birthday to John Madden. How about that? I don't know why I like his movies so much, but happy 66th birthday to Steven Seagal. Didn't he run for, did he do something like a sheriff of Jefferson Parish in New Orleans at one point in time? Didn't he do something like that? Anyway, Babyface, Silky Smooth, 59 years young today. So happy birthday to all of them. Yes, indeed. And oh, by the way, happy birthday to yours truly as well. What? Yeah. Cannot hold it in any longer. That's right. So, no presents allowed. All right. No gifts. Nothing like that. But yes, beautiful day. Great to be alive. Absolutely. Special thanks to our guest today. How about David Toms and his stories dealing with Augusta National? Mike Dettillier with all the information on the NFL draft and LSU players and the LSU spring game. That was fun. Alex Myers in Augusta with his thoughts. And he picks John Rahm to win it all. And then our good friend Michael Hugenin. Man, does he know some stuff or what? It's just absolutely amazing. Thursday, let's see. I have no idea what we're going to talk about. Well, we'll keep you up to date on the leaderboard at Augusta. The NBA playoffs are right around the corner. Magic Johnson, that's amazing. That's amazing. Will we have a new GM for the Pelicans? Well, we'll see on that note. And we'll start talking baseball series as LSU get ready to head to Missouri. How about Southern University putting a beat down on the LSU Tigers yesterday? Wow. So, again, fun show. And we greatly appreciate your feedback each and every day. You can always email me, askjordy@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter, at JHS1037. CD, job well done as always, my friend. I greatly appreciate all you do. Thanks to all of you for listening in. Thanks to the leadership at 1037 The Game. And thanks to our partners that make it possible each and every day. Hope you have a great afternoon and evening. Come on back tomorrow, same time, 2 to 4 p.m., same great station, 1037 The Game. Until then, I'm Jordy Helfert. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty and have a great rest.